Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Memo to President Biden, time to fire the Postal Service Board. Building a new labor department. Support for Biden's mask mandate growing. And today on the show, Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation and Policy Matters Ohio, on protecting consumers. Good afternoon and welcome to the Thursday, January 28th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms. That includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most recently, Pandora. Also, you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcasts. Two guests on the show today. One of our longtime regulars, Bill Samuel, Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation, AFL-CIO.org. He will be our first guest, and we're going to do a rundown of what has happened here in the last couple of weeks, most importantly, what President Biden has done for workers. And one of the first things that he did after taking the oath of office last Wednesday, he hit the ground running with a number of executive orders aimed at controlling the pandemic. And one of those orders, one of them, directs OSHA to create a COVID safety workplace standard, something the unions have been pushing for since COVID reached the United States over a year ago. Now, by signing this order, he is directing OSHA and the Mine Safety and Health Administration to create an emergency temporary workplace safety standard that is specifically related to COVID-19. We have not had that in place, and Bill's going to explain how that's going to work. And there were a slew of orders, a number of them dealing with the federal unions repealing Trump's anti-union executive orders, which came, I think that was in 2018. There were three that he issued late on a Friday afternoon. He tried to sneak them out of there. And that's been a court battle ever since. So we'll take a look at all of those. We'll also look at a COVID rescue package, stimulus checks, and we'll get into the pro and the con. Labor Federation definitely wants some checks. And New York Times did a really good story on this recently, and they point out the case for the checks. Number one, there's 10 million fewer Americans working now than when the pandemic began. All right. A lot of people don't trust the government, so it would be smart to just send them a check instead of jumping through a bunch of hoops in order to get that check. I liken this to like an unemployment insurance claim. Oh, my God, what you have to do to get qualified for that. And it's, like I said, it's a very progressive type of thing, and it helps especially those in the low income level. Now, the case against the checks, and this is interesting. Some are saying FDR, one of the most popular presidents, would not have done it. Joe Manchin, West Virginia Democrat, said, "I don't ever remember FDR recommending sending a damn penny to a human being. He gave him a job and gave him a paycheck." Well, the job gave him the paycheck. So there's some of the opinion that maybe we should target the money. There's a lot of people that don't need the check. They're working. They're working remotely. So we'll talk about that with Bill Samuel. Second guest is Kalitha Williams, and this is our segment we do with Policy Matters Ohio. PolicyMattersOhio.org is their website, and she's going to talk about Biden's opportunity to appoint a new director to the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has rulemaking authority over financial institutions like payday lenders. We had a really good conversation with Kalitha in our last segment on this show, and we'll recap some of it. It turns out, I know one of the highlights was that in the state of Ohio, and this is just one state out of 50, Ohio borrowers had paid over $50 million in fees each year to payday lenders each year. And the way it works is you borrow, your car breaks down. Here's a simple, and you know, fixing a car is not cheap. So you have to borrow $500. Well, there's a fee right off the top of that, like $25, $30. So you have that built in. Then you have to pay it within, what, 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, whatever the terms of the loan are. And if you miss that payment, then the interest charges start rolling in. That $500 can cost you literally thousands of dollars. And last time she was on the show, we talked about the rate caps. They're trying to cap the rate around 36, 37%, which is the median of the 50 states in the country. One of the poorest states, Mississippi, you know what their rate is on a payday loan of $500? 305% interest. 305% interest. How do they get away with it? The poorest state in the country. And they're making the people even poorer. So we'll have a real good conversation with Kalitha Williams as our second guest right here on America's Workforce. Representative Bill Pascrell, he's a Democrat out of New Jersey. He wants the president to fire the entire six-person U.S. Postal Service board and appoint replacements, who in turn would fire the Postmaster General, Louis DeJoy. That guy is the worst ever. And we've talked about this many, many times on the show. Trump put him in there to try to wreck the Postal Service before last year's election and to further his aim to eliminate voting by mail. Well, we know that didn't happen, but it was miserable. And the mail is still being delayed today. DeJoy started his reign over the Postal Service last spring. One of his first moves, ban overtime, even if it meant delaying mail because it had not been sorted. He also barred workers from starting or continuing postal delivery routes after 5 p.m., even if they had to drive off half empty, leaving undelivered mail on the floors. Also, his people yanked out and dismantled hundreds of special sorting machines that handled large envelopes, including envelopes containing voting materials and return ballots. He ordered the removal of hundreds of blue mailboxes nationwide, almost all of them from Democratic-run central cities and from neighborhoods where we had people of color. The result, DeJoy's delays quickly drew a mountain of criticism, not just from postal unions and their members, but from lawmakers and customers. On-time mail service declined, especially in majority-minority communities in the country. Two in particular, Detroit and Baltimore. So here's the deal. What they want to do, get the board out of there immediately. And then with the new board, that board can then determine the fate of Mr. DeJoy. The current board of governors didn't do anything while he was doing this, by the way. Nothing. They looked the other way. That led the postal workers to demand Biden dump the board so a new board can get rid of DeJoy. And now we have one lawmaker, and we need more. Bill Pascrell, as I indicated, who is joining in. Mark Diamonstein is the head of the Postal Service Union. And he said DeJoy's destruction is part of a privatization scheme by corporate America and right-wingers to wreck the system, fire workers, trash all the union contracts, and scoop up the profitable services for themselves and leave the rest of the U.S. hung out to dry. I mean, there are profitable routes in the country which would go to like a FedEx or a UPS. And those living in the country, so what? The mail is still screwed up. I have to tell you personally, I was waiting for a package from the east side of Cleveland, Ohio, to, it was maybe 15 miles away, not even that, It took 5 weeks to get to my mailbox. 5 weeks. So I hope this has legs. Apparently, this was brought up at a White House press briefing, and they said they're going to look into it. Apparently, it's not high on Biden's agenda, but hopefully, with enough pressure, something can be done. Julie Sue is President Biden's pick for Deputy Secretary of Labor. Sue, currently the California Secretary of Labor, was a contender for the top spot, but we know that went to Marty Walsh, the mayor of Boston. Now, I want to tell you, the deputy secretary generally handles the day-to-day operations of the department, and Department of Labor watchers expect her to lead enforcement and litigation, while Mr. Walsh, who is not a lawyer, will take charge on running the bureaucracy and setting up political messaging. A little background on Julie. She's the daughter of Chinese immigrants. She's advocated for low-wage workers of color over her career as a public interest lawyer and got a lot of praise from California labor leaders for her work combating rampant misclassification. In perhaps the single best sign of her ability to effectively fight for workers' rights, a California business lobbying group took out a full-page ad. This was in the Wall Street Journal, opposing her potential nomination. You know she's good if that's happening. In the meantime, we have more on this Peter Robb situation. Peter Robb, again, he's the guy that Reagan directed to fire the air traffic controllers back in 1981, as soon as he took office. Turns out that his replacement is Peter Sung Orr. And Rob, most recently, was the general counsel. Peter Sung Orr is a career NLRB staffer who most recently led the board of Chicago's regional office. Now, his pick was celebrated on Twitter, and he promised to ensure workers' fundamental rights of association at the workplace, that they are protected to the fullest extent of the law. Mr. Orr is best known for a decision back in 2014 where he ruled that football players at Northwestern University who received scholarships were employees under the meaning of the National Labor Relations Act and eligible to organize a union, which the full board ended up declining to assert any jurisdiction over the players. That was a big case, really big case. And one more story here. In response to the Biden administration's announcement of a federal mask mandate for interstate travel, John Samuelson, who is the head of the Transport Workers Union, issued a forceful statement. This is what he said. It's about damn time our government lived up to its obligations to public health. This action, taken on day one of President Biden's leadership, is a stark contrast to the failures of the past administration. A federal nationwide mask mandate is a long overdue measure to protect workers. President Biden's immediate and decisive action will help keep our members safe on the front lines. The president's mask mandate will go a long way toward protecting our members on the job. Again, that's John Samuelson, International President of the Transport Workers Union. They lost a lot of members, especially in New York City. The workers driving the buses and the subways, especially back in March and April. All right, we have to take a break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Coming up next, Mr. Bill Samuel. Don't go away.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
It takes LIUNA to build North America's infrastructure. From roads and bridges to schools and skyscrapers, the men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, build the projects we depend on. From constructing the Freedom Tower on the site of the former World Trade Center to untangling Washington, D.C.'s congested interstate, LIUNA members do the work that matters. Find out what it takes to be built by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, where you can check us out on Facebook, AWF Union Podcast, and follow us on Twitter, AWF Union Podcast. Before we go to Bill Samuel, I just want to mention I got another email here from the Republican leader of the Committee on Education and Labor. That would be Virginia Fox, who is out of North Carolina, and she issued a following statement. I was talking about this Peter Sung Orr, who is going to replace Peter Robb as the general counsel on the National Labor Relations Board. And she said, one of President Biden's first actions to unify our nation was to fire the Senate-confirmed NLRB general counsel unilaterally 10 months before his appointment expired. Perhaps President Biden needs to revisit the definition of unity. The appointment of Mr. Orr as a partisan placeholder could very well result in his future decisions being deemed null and void. President Biden should immediately reinstate Peter Robb as general counsel of the NLRB so he can serve out the remainder of his term as an independent public official free from political influence. Bill, you listening?
Actually, coming from Virginia Fox, that's not a surprise. She's about the most aggressively anti-union Republican on that committee in really in decades. I mean, and she's the ranking Republican. If we ever lost the House, she would be the chair. that would be really awful.
Oh, so, no.
You know, she can say what she wants. Obviously, in the House, if you're in the minority, you don't have much power. The Speaker really controls the agenda and the flow of legislation. That's Nancy Pelosi. And I don't think she's going to give Virginia Fox much airtime. But, yeah, this whole NLRB situation really is remarkable. And if you want to get into the first week of the Biden administration, it's really a signal that he means business. I mean, he fired him on day one. And this is the guy, this general counsel. He goes way back as an anti-union, activist, union buster. He worked with Ronald Reagan in 1981 on the Patco strike and was part of the team that convinced Reagan that he could fire them. And so he has a 40-year history now, and then he worked for various anti-union law firms and got picked to be the general counsel. So this is by a president whose name I will no longer mention, who just departed office, who was supposed to be pro-worker. He puts the most anti-union worker as anti-union lawyer as chair of the as general counsel of the NLRB, and he served there for several years until Biden fired him.
And this new guy, Peter Sung Orr, I'm getting good reviews from him. So it's going to be a whole new game in Washington,
And Orr is really temporary. He's a career official. He's a regional commissioner from Chicago, I think. And he'll serve because you can, serve until there's a nominee confirmed. And we believe the President Biden will nominate the Associate General Counsel of CWA, a union lawyer, very bright. She worked at the board before she went to CWA, so now she'd go back as a general counsel. So that really will be, night and day between her tenure there and Peter Robb's.
And then in the Labor Department, we got Marty Walsh. Do you see any problem him getting confirmed?
I don't think so. He's been a very successful mayor. Anybody who's been in office for a while they're going to dig something up. But he's had a clean record. He's well liked by both the labor community and the business community in Boston, and progressive groups like him. He's really been a unifier in the city. Cities are tough to govern. You get blamed for everything. Every pothole, every snowstorm, and he gets good reviews in the city. And sure he could have been reelected as many times as he wanted, but he agreed to serve. Now, you know, his background, he was a construction worker. Came up the hard way carrying tools. And then he was the laborers' business agent up there, and then the Boston Building Trades president. And then he ran for the State House, got elected, and he served in the assembly or the legislature, and then ran for mayor. And I think he's in his second term now, and now he's going to be labor secretary. So he's got the right background for this job, and we're very impressed with him and glad that President Biden picked him. He was a smart choice.
And let's keep in mind here, in the Labor Department, you have the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And let's get into that real quick here, because Biden signed some executive orders directing OSHA to establish a temporary safety standard for COVID-19. Can you get into some details on this? What's this going to mean?
The executive order, there's been a slew of executive orders. He's only been in office 7 days. It's kind of seems like a lot longer. Of course, he began to act like the president because we didn't have one the last month of President Trump's term. But one of his first executive orders was to direct the Occupational Safety and Health Administration and the Mine Safety and Health Administration, both MSHA and OSHA, which safeguard the working conditions of miners and all private sector workers covered by OSHA, to immediately release an emergency temporary standard, it's an ETS, to try to control the COVID outbreak in workplaces. So they would have to meet various standards before they put workers in harm's way. And this is something that's been missing for a year, as President Trump says. OSHA has been AWOL. This is the agency that's supposed to be protecting workers. You think of the meat packers, folks working in meat packing plants, in transit, all over the country. Many of the outbreaks have been in workplaces, not in private homes. And there's no regulation of it. There's no guidance. There's no inspections. There's no fines. Nothing under President Trump. So I think Biden is sending a very clear message. He wants OSHA on the job. He's also asking for more money for inspectors. He wants people out there making sure our members are safe. And that's, boy, it's about time.
Now, how far can he go with this? See, these executive orders, I mean, they're good, but if you want, I guess, obviously legislation and funding, you got to go to Congress. Now,
right, and
where does that stand?
He's actually doing both. So the COVID rescue package that he sent to Congress, $1.9 trillion, includes money for OSHA and a legislative temporary standard. So there'll be both the executive order, which directs them to do it, and they will. Obviously, they're going to follow the lead of the president of the same party. But then there's in the legislation, if it passes, it would be required by law, and then it would be, you couldn't challenge it in court. They may challenge, the business community may challenge the executive order or the temporary standard that results. I don't think they'll win, but if it's legislated, then they don't have a case. So he's doing both. And he's doing that in a lot of areas. A lot of executive orders in this first 7 days, as I have a long list of them, including restoring federal worker bargaining rights, ramping up the use of the Defense Production Act for medical supplies, for PPE, extending the moratorium on evictions, collection of student loan interest, all these things, protecting immigrants who have DACA. Right now, restoring LGBTQ protections at work, all kinds of things. Buy America, you mentioned. Those are all executive orders. Some may be challenged by the Republicans or the business community, but a lot of these things he's also sending up in the form of legislation, so it'll be both. If we can get Congress to pass it.
Bill, let's pick up on that point, because as you know, there are a lot of good bills, especially in the House, that went to die in the Senate when Mitch McConnell was in charge. I'm just wondering, and you've been working the Hill for a whole long time now, what's your thoughts moving forward? Because there's some good legislation now that we're talking about, these executive orders, for one.
We're at a turning point. I mean, I think this is for people who study Congress and politics, this is a fascinating time, because you've got an equally divided Senate, 50-50 now, having won the Georgia elections. The vice president breaks the tie. That means we have 51 votes. Anytime we can keep Democrats together, unified, and we can pass a bill if we can somehow figure out our way around the filibuster. Now, the Republicans can filibuster just about any bill. There's a few they can't. Under the rules of the Senate, we can get into that. I think Chuck Schumer, the new majority leader, is going to have to decide, and his caucus is going to have to decide, that if Mitch McConnell plays the same game he played in 2009 when Barack Obama was president, and McConnell famously announced, my job is to make him a one-term president, and the way he figured he would do that is to prevent any legislation from passing, to prevent President Obama from solving any problems, which he was successful in some ways at doing that. And, of course, 2 years later, we lost the Congress. People kind of rebelled. You know, they saw inaction in Washington. They blamed the president, even though McConnell was mainly at fault. So we face that again. There is a move in the Democratic caucus and among progressive groups for the Democrats to get rid of the filibuster, to get rid of the supermajority requirement that legislation pass with 60 votes if Republicans decide to mount a filibuster. And they can do that, interestingly, with a simple majority. You can change the rules with 51 votes. So if Democrats can keep the party together and the vice president agrees, they can change the rules and make it so that legislation only requires 51 votes. That's already the case with nominations, and we know for the Supreme Court, President Trump got his last nominee on the court after the McConnell changed the rules on confirmations from 60 to 51. It's kind of it's a strange quirk in the process, but I think Schumer's thinking about it, and Democrats are going to have to decide sometime this year whether they're going to let McConnell block progress on things as important as COVID relief. And the Republicans are already talking about, oh, Biden wants to spend too much money. He's not working closely enough with Republicans. You know, and I think Biden's and the Democrats are going to, President Biden, are going to have to decide, are they going to be bold, take some risks, push through these bills that are going to help Americans who desperately need help, pass the PRO Act, for example, by getting rid of the filibuster. If they don't, I think it's going to be a tough 2 years. Now, the budget is a separate piece of legislation that you cannot filibuster. It's an arcane rule that goes back about 40 years. So the Democrats are now talking about sticking in the budget. It's an annual bill. A lot of these things, like to deal with COVID, maybe even the minimum wage, and see if we can get that through the Senate with 51 votes. So there's a lot happening, and there's a lot unknown about what's going to take place over the next 3 to 6 months.
It'll be interesting. All right, we have to take a break. Bill Samuels on our live line, one of our regular guests here on America's Workforce. He heads the Government Affairs Department of the Labor Federation. Great information posted at AFLCIO.org. Later in the show, Kalitha Williams will be joining us, and she's with Policy Matters Ohio, and she's going to talk about consumer protections that Biden needs to put in place to help so many people that are hurting. Back in a few minutes.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
It takes LIUNA to power North America with affordable energy. The men and women of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, have the skills needed to build and maintain oil, natural gas, nuclear, solar, and wind projects that are shaping America's energy future. From new energy tech to retrofitted facilities, LIUNA members do it all. Find out what it takes to be powered by LIUNA at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.org.
America's Workforce is being brought to you in part by the Communication Workers of America.
Mesothelioma is a rare type of cancer caused by exposure to asbestos. If you are exposed to asbestos and have mesothelioma or lung cancer, the trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at KellyandFerraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. Don't forget, the show is available on a number of platforms, and that now includes Pandora. We added Pandora a couple of weeks ago. So the list includes Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and like I just mentioned, Pandora. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the North Coast Labor Federation, part of the AFL-CIO. Speaking of which, let's go back to our live line, rejoin Bill Samuel, who is the Government Affairs Director for the Labor Federation out of Washington. And you're still not in your office yet, are you? You're still holding up
office
at home?
My home.
Okay.
So, the office is partially open. There are a couple of people who are showing up. But, you know, I can get as much done from here right now. No one's showing up to Congress either, so I can't go up to Capitol Hill. They show up to vote, and that's it, and then they're basically home.
I hear
you. Very few staff are there. Yeah.
Talk to me about these stimulus checks, and I'm hearing all kind of, I guess they want to do 2,000. We had the 600 in the last Congress, and now they're talking 2,000. They're saying now, well, because of the 600, it's going to be 1,400. And then there's some are saying, well, wait a minute, there's a lot of people that are working that don't need the money. And I understand that part. So there's good arguments on both sides. But where's the Labor Federation on this right now, Bill?
Yeah, you know, getting these stimulus checks out is not our top priority. We think we ought to take care of the unemployed and try to get help to, you know, to keep businesses open. But we think these checks are important. There are a lot of people who can't go to work. Their offices are closed. Their restaurants are closed. Their shops are closed. So talking about getting them a job doesn't really make sense. They have a job, but they can't work, and their employer is not paying them. So getting them a check makes sense, and it gets money into the economy, and most people spend it. It's true it goes to some people who don't, and maybe they put it in their bank account. But I think there are far fewer people in that category than those who really need it, if you just look around the people you know. So I think that's a specious argument. You know, there are many economists who believe that the checks went out last summer really helped keep the economy from going into depression, because there's so many people at home who couldn't afford groceries. You know, you've seen the food lines at food pantries. People need help, and I think if we're going to, you know, argue about the 5% that are getting checks that don't need it, I think we're looking at the wrong end of the, looking through the wrong end of the telescope here, and I think it's a mistake.
Now, the Republicans are saying that we can't afford that. Are they now concerned about the deficit, which they were not under the Trump administration?
Yeah,
is that right?
That is just very typical. First of all, any economist will tell you the federal government has to spend money to pull the economy out of a recession or a depression. This is the time to do it. To fix the economy, to spend money on vaccines and unemployment insurance, and fixing schools so students can get back to their classrooms. That's all money well spent, and it'll get the economy back. I mean, that's the whole point here. Interest rates are historically low. There are many conservative economists now. Trump's own former economic advisor Kevin Hassett said we should pass a big stimulus bill, and he endorsed Biden's $1.9 trillion bill the other day. I don't think there's any argument here that to pinch pennies when the economy is in a nosedive doesn't make any sense at all. It makes matters worse, not better. And so I don't think that's a serious argument. And as you point out, now all of a sudden Republicans have religion. They just spent $2 trillion on a tax cut. That's money that does not really do much for the economy. That goes into people's portfolios. They may spend it on another luxury car or a painting, but most of the people who got those tax cuts at the high end, that was not money that helped generate economic growth. And mm-hmm. a lot of economists agree with that. It did increase the deficit. You know, it lowered tax revenue, as I said, by $2 trillion. Putting money in unemployment insurance and schools and other programs that help people who need help, that's what generates economic activity.
What about raising taxes? I heard that Biden was thinking, this was during the campaign, of raising taxes on those making, what was it, $400,000 or more a year?
Yeah, I think he wants to revisit those tax cuts that we just talked about. I think we need that revenue. If we're gonna rebuild our infrastructure, that's the next big project that President Biden wants to take on, is his recovery package, what he calls Build Back Better, dealing with climate change. So there are a lot of things we can spend money on that, again, would be good economic drivers. And contribute to long-term growth. So we may have to raise taxes on people who, you know, on capital gains. That capital gains taxes benefit mostly the wealthy. We're still giving benefits to corporations that ship jobs overseas. We got to close those loopholes. We got to raise the corporate tax. It's at historically low levels now. Corporations are paying far less. You know, you've seen the stories about Amazon paying no taxes last year.
Oh, yeah.
Jeff Bezos, he's now the richest man, if not in the world, certainly in the United States. They all got richer during the pandemic, and they're paying no taxes because the tax code is filled with loopholes that Republicans have put in when they're in charge. So we need to close those and raise some revenue for needed things like rebuilding our infrastructure.
It's funny you bring that up because Oxfam came out with a report the other day, and they talked about the people like Jeff Bezos and the guy from Tesla, Elon Musk, how wealthy they became during the pandemic. They lost a lot in the stock market, but it all came back. And for the rest of America and the entire world, it will take at least a decade, to recoup that money. That's how deep this pandemic has affected so many lives. One more issue here, Bill. I was mentioning this at the top of the show, the Postal Service. And a representative, you might know him, Bill Pascrell, out of New Jersey. Mm-hmm. He wants Biden to fire the entire six-person Postal Service board and appoint replacements who, in turn, would get rid of Louis DeJoy. And we know what a train wreck the Postal Service has become because of DeJoy. Do you see that happening?
You know, I think it's possible. You know, we've talked to the postal unions. They're talking to the White House, to people around the president. I think that, I don't know if they want to fire all of them, but they may. I mean, there are some Democratic members of the Board of Governors they may want to keep. I'm not really sure of the total membership now. There's also a number of vacancies. I'm sure they want to get rid of DeJoy. You know, who did his best to screw up the elections. Thankfully, he didn't succeed. But that, you know, there's a lot of agencies around government like that that really were sort of poisoned during the Trump administration. He put, you know, friends and cronies and political allies in jobs that required some expertise. So I think the president is looking, you know, all around the government. There's something like 8,000 political appointments he can make. It's going to take some time to get through all those. I mean, they're not all
wow.
the level of the Postal Board of Governors, you know, or cabinet secretaries. There are a lot of political appointees around the government and at every agency and board and commission. But I'm sure he will focus on the Postal Service soon because it's such a critical agency. And it's not in great shape now. I think they need more money. They're greatly in need of some reforms that the postal unions have been proposing that Pascrell supports. And I think President Biden will as well. So I think it's something he'll take care of pretty quickly.
8,000 appointments. Yeah, it's gonna take a long time to do some house cleaning because Trump did his best, especially after he realized he wasn't going to remain as president.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly, he didn't fill a lot of spots. There are a lot of vacant spots, like at, you know, the State Department. It kind of got hollowed out, and he didn't fill them. So there are a lot of places where the president doesn't have to fire anybody or ask for resignations. He just has to hire people. But there are a lot of them, and. So I think they have a pretty skeletal crew moving into the White House now, into the agencies. I think at the Labor Department they're able to bring in about 40 people on day one, January 20th. They got a lot of hiring to do, and obviously there's a lot of good people out there. So we're trying to help them.
There you go. All right, we'll leave it on that note. Bill, always a pleasure. You take care. Be safe at home, and I know you got your work cut out for you, so we'll have more to talk about next month, all right?
Great. Look forward to it.
Bill Samuel on our live line. Quick break. When we come back, Kalitha Williams on behalf of Policy Matters Ohio.
This is America's Workforce.
It takes LIUNA to keep America running. Over 70,000 public employees are part of LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, delivering critical services such as health care and emergency response, as well as maintaining roads and sanitation systems. Even the National Postal Mail Handlers Union, representing over 47,000 U.S. postal workers, is affiliated with LIUNA. Find out what it takes for LIUNA to keep America running at LIUNA.org. That's LIUNA.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Have you or a loved one been diagnosed with cancer after taking Zantac? If you have taken Zantac and have cancer, you may be entitled to compensation. The trial lawyers at Kelly & Ferraro may be able to help you. Find us at kellyandferraro.com. Kelly & Ferraro, trial lawyers.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And don't forget, you can check us out on Facebook. That would be AWF Union Podcast. And follow us on Twitter. Our Twitter handle is at AWF Union Podcast. Let's go to line number two. Welcome back to the show, Kalitha Williams. Kalitha is with the organization Policy Matters Ohio. Website is policymattersohio.org. She's here to talk about a new director for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which, by the way, has rulemaking authority over financial institutions like payday lenders. Oh, boy, that's a conversation. Hey, Kalitha, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us once again.
Thank you for the invitation.
You and I talked about the payday lenders. We can recap that a little bit, but first, let's talk about this this position, Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. So is this seat vacant now? What's the status?
Yes. So my understanding is that the director under the Trump administration, Karen Craninger, at the request of President Biden, did submit her resignation. And President Biden had already announced that his anticipated incoming director, Rohit Chopra, who has a history of just being a tremendous, strong, and aggressive consumer advocate for Americans. He was formerly with the CFPB as the student loan ombudsman. That's hard to say. But basically, he was the lead investigator for student loan complaints and just had a great history of pursuing and bringing actions against student loan servicers as well as predatory for-profit colleges. Right now, he is on the Federal Trade Commission, but consumer advocates like myself, we are really excited for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to go back to being an aggressive consumer watchdog and not a lapdog for the financial services industry, which is what many of us saw during the Trump administration.
We have to keep in mind, too, this department was formed out of the housing crisis and the Great Recession, which was back in 2007, 2008, 2009, where a lot of people lost their homes and they didn't have any recourse. And that's why this was formed. So this is a very important department. Talk to me about how they can rein in these payday lenders, because every state is pretty much different. And I want to thank you, by the way, for driving me to the Consumer Law Center, the National Consumer Law Center, NCLC, and they did a rundown on all the 50 states. And the medium is, what is it, like 36% interest rate if you borrow $500 worth of money. But there's states like Mississippi. I still can't believe Mississippi's over 300%. So if you borrow $500 in the state of Mississippi, one of the poorest states in the country, that could literally cost you, my God, if you during a certain amount of time, it could be $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 because of the interest rate. So that being said, can this new person, that whoever is going to get the position, can they rein in these payday lenders across America?
Well, I just want to go back a little bit. So the first director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau began a process to implement a rule that would have regulated payday lending in the country. But unfortunately, when Craninger came into the agency, she upended and ensured that the rule was never implemented. This new director, we're hoping, will revisit some of that work and really focus in on reining in payday lending. So the agency has tremendous potential. And in the hands of the right director, a director who wants to protect consumers and will make that paramount, there is a lot of opportunity to regulate exploitative financial services around the country. So there's great potential here. And, you know, we think that Rohit Chopra can do some important things around payday lending.
Now, is there a confirmation process for this person to get this position? And I know there's going to be some pushback, especially from the business community, right?
Yes, absolutely. A new director would need to be confirmed by the Senate. But, you know, a lot of people believe because he already went through the confirmation process to sit on the Federal Trade Commission, that it won't be as contentious. But obviously, there has already been reporting from Wall Street banks and, you know, powerful financial services companies who have already expressed concerns. But of course they would. With the CFPB being the leading, having the capacity to being the leading watchdog over their industry, they're going to be nervous to have a real consumer advocate leading the agency.
Oh, yeah. This is the end of the gravy train for a lot of these companies here.
I think that's a great way to describe it. Just to share the difference, you know, when the first 5 years of the Bureau, the agency had recovered nearly $11 billion for American consumers from companies that had taken advantage of them. But during the Trump years, they only recovered $2.3 billion. Last year, we've seen complaints to the CFPB, and these are consumers reaching out to the agency complaining about what they've been experiencing. We've seen the complaints rise 60% just since 2019. You know, we know that as Americans are trying to weather the COVID pandemic, which has brought about the global economic crisis, it's more important than ever that there is an agency looking out for them to ensure that businesses and financial services companies are not taking advantage of the little income many American families have. So we know this agency is important. It hasn't been utilizing all of its tools to protect consumers. And we're looking forward to the new director taking the agency back in the right direction.
Well, that's certainly good to hear. And I know on a local level, a lot of the consumer affairs departments that were at city halls, they're gone. They're gone because of budget cuts. So we need all the help we can get because there's so many big corporations that are taking advantage of poor people. That is the case. Now, let's talk about Sherrod Brown. I understand that Ohio Senator Sherrod Brown will be the chair of the Senate Banking Committee, and he, too, is a champion of what we're talking about, regulating the payday lenders. What do you see happening here on the Banking Committee level?
Yeah, I should note, I'm obviously from Ohio, and consumer advocates across the country, we are heralding the appointment, U.S. Senator Sherrod Brown rising to be the chair of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs. He has been an incredible champion on consumer issues, and many people know that he was the one that brought to the national forefront the dignity of work. And we know he's going to use the committee to protect workers in this country from exploitative Wall Street businesses. You should know that this committee not only covers financial services, but also transportation and housing. Senator Brown has already said that he wants the committee to really focus on ensuring that Wall Street doesn't control the economy. You know, a lot of us see, you know, there are lots of stakeholders in our economy, but, you know, under the last chairman, the emphasis was about deregulating businesses, you know, removing protections that protected consumers. And Senator Brown has already shared that he wants to really take a closer look at these organizations and how they're and how they're working in our economy to make sure all Americans are benefit. He's talked about increasing housing opportunities, expanding bank services for low-income Americans, which include things like having a public option for banks, like banking at post offices. He wants to, because his committee is a part, does look at transportation, he's talked about ways to address the climate crisis through his committee, and also keeping race equity at the forefront of that work as well. So he has really big goals for the committee and consumer advocates. We look forward to engaging him as the chairman of the committee to help advance this work.
You mentioned banking at the postal service, and they got to do some house cleaning there first, because there's some people, especially on the Board of Governors, and I just mentioned this with our previous guest, and once they do that, hopefully they could move the needle in the right direction. I do like that idea. That has surfaced several times about banking at the local post office. Do you think that has legs once they deal with the internal affairs of the post office? What's your thoughts?
Well, I definitely think we need to be looking at more ways to expand banking opportunities. Unfortunately, there are too many Americans that do not have access to traditional banking services, and many of them turn to very expensive check cashing places, payday lenders. There are prepaid debit card services that charge exorbitant rates. And the lowest income Americans should have access to the lowest fee to no fee services. But unfortunately, what we see is they are typically exploited and paying the highest amount for banking services. And that's just not okay. I believe Senator Sherrod Brown through his committee is going to be exploring those opportunities and using his committee to advance those opportunities.
Kalitha, to your point on the banking situation, yeah, overdraft fees, I think they're just shy of $40 right now. And if you get a couple of bounced checks, bingo, you're over $100. And on the other side, take a look at what you get as far as an interest rate on your money today, if you have any money. You put it in the bank and you're getting perhaps 0.5%. I mean, it used to be 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%. CDs aren't paying any. So the banks are making a whole lot of money. So we'll see what happens here. Maybe we'll see banking at the Postal Service. Who knows? What do you think?
Well, I just want to pick up your thread around overdraft fees. Many advocates are really hopeful that the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau will pick up regulating overdraft fees. It is a multi-billion-dollar business for banks. It's a huge profit center for them, and it is far from a service that's helpful and protects consumers. So we are hopeful that the CFPB will come out with a rule or somehow regulate this what I contend to be a very exploitative service. Well, service is probably the wrong word, but it's very exploitative. Last time I read, I think it's a $17 billion industry for banks, which is primarily just passive, massive amounts of income for them. But I believe, you know, with this new CFPB chair, a new chair of the Senate Banking and Committee, that there are tremendous opportunities for American workers and consumers to see more protections on the national front.
A lot of work needs to be done. Kalitha, great job as usual. You'll stay on this issue. Kalitha Williams on behalf of Policy Matters Ohio. Website is Policy Matters Ohio for more information. You take care, and we'll talk down the road, all right?
Great. Thank you.
That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up tomorrow, the Indiana Building Trades and Teamsters in Florida. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening. and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.